Okay, next item on the agenda is presentations and discussions. And tonight, it's a presentation of the FY24 financial audit. Scott McIntyre, CPA, Managing Director of CBIZ. Jamie, you want to do the lead-in?
Yeah, just a little lead-in. While Scott's getting entered in as a panelist, I think all of you have been through this now for 3, 4, 5 years. Just a way of background, I just want to make sure it's clear, not every community does this. You know, we've been public, where not every audit comes into a Board of Selectmen or a council and does a public presentation. Mm-hmm. As many of you have been on the council for many years in my tenure here, we've made huge improvements over the years. You know, 10 years ago, we used to get what's called a management letter. You get a side letter with a few recommendations on how you can improve. And I know through the auditing process, Scott and his team also work with Kerry, our chief financial officer, and the staff on things behind the scenes that we can try to, small things that we can try to improve on. But these audits are something that we're very proud of, on the progress that we've made over the years. And I'll spare any other additional announcements and commentary until the end. But we have the audit right up here. We attach it to our agendas. We come and publicly present in front of the council at an open meeting. All of you are able to ask Scott and his team any questions you have about the audit. Obviously, as you all know, there may be some questions from some folks this year for good reason, given the some of the chit-chat in the community. And then after Scott's done with his presentation, everybody has had an opportunity to ask questions. Mr. Chairman, I'll save some additional comments and announcements for a little bit later.
I'll save you 30 seconds.
You're going to jump right now.
Yeah, couldn't resist. Scott, welcome.
He's mute. Scott, you got to unmute.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the council, for the invitation to come in tonight or join your meeting tonight and give you a brief overview of the results of our audit of your June 30, 2024 financial statements. I'll start by saying it was once again a pleasure to working with Jamie, Kerry, and the staff in Franklin. Very well prepared. An audit by its nature is a lot of Q&A, a lot of questions and answer, a lot of analysis of accounts, transactions, walkthroughs of transactions, reperformance of transactions, and things like that. And the town was very, very cooperative as it has been for many years. So what my objective is tonight is just to give you a broad overview of the results. I'll also walk through the financial statements. And I think in my communication with Jamie earlier today, he is going to pass out what I'll call the single audit report, and I'll explain more about that as the conversation goes on. But I'm going to walk through the financial statements first. Jamie's going to switch pages as we communicate here so you can see the highlights. And then when I get to what I call the single audit report, that will show you the results of our internal control evaluation, not only of the town as a whole, but also of your expenditures in compliance with your federal grants that were received during fiscal year 24. So before we, last thing, and Jamie, if I remember right, you are going to share the financial statements. Ultimately, I'll start on PDF page 4 of the financial statements, which is the opinion. But I do want to just take a minute and tell the council and anyone that's listening is that our audit of your financial statements went very well. In the most basic terms that I can think of, what that means is we found the town's books and records to be in good working order. And as a result of that, we did not need to propose any significant audit entries as a result of our work. If some of this sounds like it may be issues that you've heard in the past, that is true. However, I'm not doing the same presentation year over year. Our professional standards require the communication that I'm making this evening. So to let you know how the audit went, also to let you know that there were no significant audit entries as a result of the procedures that we will perform. There were no disagreements between management of Franklin and our auditing firm as to the application of generally accepted accounting principles. Sometimes when new accounting standards come out, there can be differences in interpretation. There were no such disagreements in this fiscal year 2024. There are some significant estimates in your financial statements. The largest ones deal with your net pension liability, your proportional share of the county retirement system, as well as your net OPEB liability. And with both the pension and OPEB liabilities, there are related accounts, deferred outflows, deferred inflows, and the allocation of expenditures. A relatively new item in our professional standards that I am required to talk with you about deals with what we call our non-audit services, or technically they're called non-attest services. We assist Franklin the way we do with virtually every community we work with in the Commonwealth, and by even beyond Massachusetts, most of our communities in other New England states, we assist the communities in preparing the financial statements. These are Franklin's financial statements. They come directly from the books and records of the town. However, we do assist, and again, it's considered a non-audit service, so my professional standards require that I tell you that we participate. In addition to doing the audit, we did participate in some non-audit work during the same process. So, not anything new there, and again, it's just what's new is professional standards now make sure I inform you of that. So, Jamie, is it possible to begin on PDF page 4? I don't have the screen in front of me, but if you tell me you're there we go. Okay, great.
Yep.
Actually, if you hit print page 1, if you could go back a couple of pages, maybe right there.
I'm going to go by PDF number 4, right, Scott?
Yes, please.
Yep.
Thank
independent
you.
Auditor's report. Yep.
Yeah, this is our independent auditor's report. Just, I'm pretty sure I said this last year. Last year, the header here was Markham LLP CPAs. The year before that was what I call my legacy firm, Melanson. This year it's CBIZ. I spoke about this last year. In January of 2023, Melanson, the firm I had been with for at this point nearly 40 years, merged with a national firm, Markham. The primary driver of that was there are not enough students going into accounting these days, so we needed to avail ourselves of additional resources. That's what I told you last year. Little did we know, and we certainly did not know, that CBIZ, which is a much larger company than Markham was, CBIZ acquired Markham effective November 1st of last calendar year. So just a quick overview. Myself, I've been doing work in the Commonwealth for, like I said, almost 40 years. I've been periodically a partner on the engagement in Franklin for many, many years, but we do rotate our staff. In fact, this year we had an entirely new set of staff other than myself on the engagement. With that said, the opinion that you're looking at here is what is known as an unmodified opinion. In more basic terms, it is called a clean audit opinion. The opening paragraph there talks about our opinions, and in our opinion, your financial statements are materially fairly presented in accordance with GAAP or generally accepted accounting principles. The basis of accounting paragraph there is important. It lists two sets of auditing standards that we follow. The only other set of auditing standards deals with publicly traded companies, so it doesn't apply in your case, but we followed both generally accepted auditing standards in the United States as well as generally accepted government auditing standards. There's some differences. I could tell you about it. If there's any questions on that, I'd be happy to talk about it. Again, it's a clean audit opinion, technically referred to as an unmodified opinion on your financial statements. Following the opinion is your management's discussion and analysis. That is a great resource to go back to at a later point in time to understand why certain key account balances have changed. Jamie, if you could please jump forward to PDF page 16, please. PDF page 16 is the second half of your statement of net position. Your statement of net position is what I call your long-term perspective balance sheet. Technically, as I said before, it's the statement of net position. The prior page deals with the cash, the receivables, the capital assets, and things like that. On the long-term perspective financial statements, there's really two accounts that In our opinion, we just have a professional responsibility to make sure we draw these to the attention of readers, because we don't think any conversation about a local government's finances is completed without at least mentioning what's going on with your net pension liability and your net OPEB liability. Focusing on that first column of numbers, right in the non-current liability section, and again, in that first column of numbers, you see a net pension liability of $53 million. That is Franklin's proportional share of the Norfolk County overall unfunded pension liability. It's measured as of, it's measured 6 months before your year end. So that was measured as of 12/31/23. I would want to point out that there's an increase in that liability by about $9 million. And that increase in the liability is directly attributable to a drop that the county system made in its discount rate. The discount rate is the expected future earnings. As that is, discount rate was lowered or dropped, with fewer expected earnings going forward, the liability has increased by about $9 million. The net, to make sure I add certain perspective to that, you are on a funding schedule with the county, where you make an annual required contribution that over time the system will become fully funded. So just wanted to add that last bit for some proper context. The net OPEB liability, OPEB or OPEB, stands for other post-employment benefits. What they're really getting at is retiree health care. And as of June 30, 2024, in the governmental activities, that first column of numbers, the net OPEB liability was about $63.5 million, up slightly over the prior year from about $61 million, just really based on some of the experience claims that occurred during fiscal year 24. There's a wealth of disclosures in your report dealing with these two liabilities. Again, you also, on to add perspective to the OPEB liability, you do have an OPEB trust fund that's reasonably well funded. Not the most funded plan in the Commonwealth, but I have certain clients in the Commonwealth that don't have any OPEB funding. So it's a great start to the funding of the OPEB. The town's doing very well in that area. And it's just a matter of time and allowing the contributions to continue and to let the interest earnings, you know, accrue to the fund, and your liability will come down. So, with that said, if you could pop over two more pages to PDF page 24. This is, if I refer to the last balance sheet as the long-term perspective, no, I think you're going a little too far, Jamie. Print page 15. If I refer to the prior balance sheet as your long-term perspective balance sheet, right there, thank you. This is your short-term perspective. Almost a cash basis balance sheet, not quite. I could get into the details about the differences if there are any questions in that area. But quite honestly, this is the first place that most readers of your financial statement will turn. And Jamie, I, if you could make sure that the audience sees the fund balance section in the lower left right there. I can see it. Now I suspect the rest of the audience can as well. A couple things I want to point out. First column of numbers is the general fund. Again, this is where most readers will turn first, and they will look at the total fund balance of 31.9 or almost $32 million. That's an increase of about $2.8 million over the prior year. Very healthy increase, but one that you would expect to see in a community rated the way Franklin is. But you would expect to see fund balance increase most years. A lot of times the fund balance is, you judge the fund balance by looking at it as an percentage of your expenditures. Oftentimes, or most times, expenditures go up each year, so you would like to see an increase in the overall fund balance each year to keep pace with the expenditure levels of the community. Mm-hmm. There are various components of fund balance there. The unassigned fund balance with an account balance of $17.5 million. If you just looked at two pieces of paper, you'd see a significant increase in that number. But when you dig below the surface and deal with a one-day timing issue that occurred last year, it really is essentially the same unassigned fund balance at 6/30/24 as there was at 6/30/23. Where much of the increase lies here is in your committed fund balance. The fifth number up from the bottom there, the $12.4 million. That largely included in that number is the town's various stabilization funds. And as I mentioned earlier, your MD&A or management's discussion and analysis, a great place to go back to at another point, a later point in time to see why certain account balance changed. That $12.4 million is up about $1.5 million over the prior year. And there's a specific table in your MD&A, print page 10, for those who might be taking some notes, to go back to at a later point in time to understand which stabilization accounts increased and which may have decreased during fiscal year 24. Jamie, now if we could hop all the way over to print page 24, PDF page 24. Want to talk just for a minute about the town's enterprise funds. If you could stop right there, Jamie. There are three components of your enterprise fund financial statements. The balance sheet, technically it's a net statement of net positions, the statement of revenues and expenditures and changes in fund balance. But I think the most important part of an enterprise fund financial statement is the statement of cash flows. What I think the key metric here is, if you look at from the top of this page down, if we focus on that first column of numbers, which is the sewer fund, that first subtotal that you come to, net cash provided by operations, again, in that first column of numbers, it's a net cash provided of $1.5 million, almost $1.6 million. What credit rating agencies and financial institutions will look at is, does that number right there, does it cover the principal and interest on the debt service, and is there some residual net cash provided by operations available for capital asset acquisition, reinvestment in the plant, if you will? And I'm not going to get too much more technical on here, but if you were to take a look at that $1.5, almost $1.6 million in net cash provided by operations, if you go down a couple of sections in the report, you'll see numbers in parentheses indicating the amounts that were paid for principal and interest, and you'll see that the net cash provided by operation more than covers the principal and interest there, which is what, again, communities that are rated similar to Franklin, what rating agencies would expect to see in communities similarly rated to Franklin. Just one more page I'm going to hit two more pages, and then I'll talk about the single audit report. If you could go one more after this one, Jamie, please. This gets into your OPEB trust fund. One more, please. It's just easy for me to talk about this and what I call the inflows and outflows of this statement. Really what I would point out to is in that first column of numbers, that's your OPEB or other post-employment benefit trust fund. I would look to the third number up from the bottom in that first column of numbers, and you see that it had a change in net position of a little bit more than $2 million. That change is directly attributable to cash contributions that the town made into the plan during fiscal year 2024, as well as investment earnings on the existing assets of the plan. The beginning net position was about 12.3, the ending net position, $2 million more than that. That's showing good continued funding of the OPEB plan, which will, should things continue this way, will reduce that net OPEB liability that we saw on your long-term perspective financial statements. And lastly, one more page to go is the, PDF page 60, Jamie. This is the budget versus actual comparative schedule. What you see here is very, very consistent with the prior year. Strong budgetary performance is the way I would categorize it. Jamie, right there, Jamie. Thank you very much. The focus here is on that fourth or the column on the far right, and I'll divide this into three sections. The top third shows the total revenues in excess of what was anticipated through the budgetary process of $2.6, almost $2.7 million. A lot of that is coming from motor vehicle excise, other excise taxes, investment income. Franklin, like so many of our clients in fiscal year 24, we think clients were wise and were, relatively modest with the expected investment earnings, and they showed a favorable investment earnings compared to the budget. On the expenditure side, sort of the middle third of this page, you see the various functions, general government, public safety, all the way down to capital outlay, and then the total expenditures, almost a $1.6 million in unspent and unencumbered money during the year. You add those two numbers together, the favorable revenue performance and the favorable expenditure performance, and you have a favorable budgetary performance of about $4.3 million. Now, the final section in the lower, in the very bottom of this page, the final third, if you will, has a lot of negatives in there. I think this presentation is appropriate because anytime a community uses its free cash, it is expecting the outflows of resources to exceed the inflows. So you're going to see a draw in your overall fund balance when you do use free cash. So that's why the negatives are there, because you expected that the inflows of resources would exceed the outflows of resources to exceed the inflows because you were drawing on existing savings accounts. So that's why those numbers are shown there in negative. When I look at this, and it's also why the town chooses to outline the purposes or the use of free cash was for a capital plan, property acquisition, stabilization. You don't see operations in there. And that's something that would be viewed very favorably by financial institutions and credit rating agencies. That the use of free cash, which almost all communities use it, Franklin in this case in fiscal year 24 is not using it for operations, it's using it for one-time costs and adding to its existing stabilization fund. So, Jamie, do you have the second, the what I call the single audit report available there? If we could maybe just hit the cover page.
Yep, just put it up, Scott.
Thank you. I don't think it's necessary to walk through each of the, there's two reports in here. I can summarize them real quickly and then I'll offer to try to answer any questions that the council may have. As the title here talks about, there's two reports in here. One is required by generally accepted government auditing standards and the other is required by uniform guidance. Generally accepted government auditing standards require that we evaluate the town's internal controls and determine whether or not there are any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in those internal controls. And the definitions of those two terms, significant deficiencies and material weaknesses, are included in the text of this, of the first of the two reports that's in here. They're not favorable. That means there are issues that you really that professional standards require me to bring to the attention of those charged with governance. Pleased to be able to report to you that again in fiscal year 24, our audit disclosed no material weaknesses in internal control and no significant deficiencies in internal control. The second of the two reports I mentioned is required by what is known as uniform guidance. In essence, what that really means is, as a recipient of federal grants and having expended those dollars or some of those dollars during fiscal year 24, we as the outside auditors must perform, our professional standards require us to perform internal control evaluation over the administration of the federal dollars, as well as testing for compliance with uniform guidance, which really is the rules and regulations that you need to follow in when it comes to administering federal grants. In fiscal year 2024, in Franklin, like in so many communities, not only in the Commonwealth, but across New England, the ARPA, or the American Rescue Plan dollars that were utilized in fiscal year 24 with a program that our risk assessment determined needed to be tested. Much like the generally accepted government auditing standards report, this uniform guidance report requires us to report any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in your internal control structure relative to federal grant administration, and whether or not, based on our test work, we found any issues of non-compliance. Very pleased to be able to report to you, is summarized in the second of the two reports here, is our audit disclosed no issues of non-compliance with the ARPA program and no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies in internal control surrounding the administration of federal grants. So, that is a super quick walkthrough of our audit of your financial statements. But we always want to be comprehensive enough so that you understand what the audit involves. It's not just, you know, attesting to the numbers. It's evaluating the internal controls of the town as a whole. And certainly when it comes to the administration of federal grants, that is a huge component of what we call a financial statement audit. And by extension, it goes towards the federal grants. So with that, I'll turn it back to the chair or Jamie and try to answer any questions that they may have.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, questions from the council. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott, this is Councilor Jones. We've spoken many times over the years, and I honestly have to say, and I've said this many times before, I actually like listening to these audits every single year. Most people be like, well, how can somebody get excited to hear about an audit? I get excited about this because for as long as I've been sitting in this chair, from the former TA who was actually here tonight to Jamie and the current administration, this is the testament to the efficiency of our government. And the way, and just your report is again, a glaring report of how well our community is run, how well our numbers are run, how well the audits are done, as well as the accounting is done. And just to talk for a second about how you were joking earlier, I don't know if it's a joke, that we're not really having as many people going into accounting. I actually took a financial accounting course here at Dean College and learned a lot about much of how this works. And the funny thing was that the teacher right out of the gate, who was actually a financial person from Dean College, said, folks, I'm not going to lie to you, this is financial accounting. I can't make this any more interesting than I can. It is what it is. But just to hear how well our local government, our treasurer department, and everything is run, it just makes me proud. It just makes me so very proud to be a part of this community and stewards of the taxpayers' money. And Scott, again, I know you've been doing this for 40 years, but I wanted to thank you and your organization for taking the time to come and look at our books and give us this report. And I know it sounds weird to sound excited to hear these things, but it is. It's wonderful news, and I wanted to thank you for taking your time tonight to present this to us. And I know our chairman's just as excited as I am because he's over here raising his hands. If he had pom poms in his hand, he would. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
This is true. Thank you, Councilor Jones. Councilor DeLorco.
Thank you. Hey, Scott, just again, I'm going to piggyback on Glenn's. It's so nice to hear this and how good everybody does in our administration. So, it's, from a council's point, it's very. It's exciting. But I did remember what you said last year about how there's not too many CPAs going into the trade anymore. And I have a nephew that is graduating from Bentley, a great nephew actually, next year. He's a junior, he'll be a senior next year. And I went to him and I said, geez, our auditor said there's not that many people getting into that field. And years ago, everybody did taxes, and he said, Uncle Robert, he goes, it's totally right. He goes, I'm only a junior, and I have so many job offerings now at all six figures, and they're dying for me to go there. You don't hear that from people coming out of college, that's all I'm going to say. So I didn't believe you last year, but I got to tell you, I do believe you.
There's only so much fun you can do with numbers. Other councilors, Councilor Cormier Ledger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Scott. I just want to for those watching and for those in chambers and for those that are gonna do the recap video. This right here is the proof that you've been asking for, that we are a well-managed town. Our numbers speak for themselves. We may not always have enough money to do all of the wonderful things that we want to do, but we do well with the money that we have. No management letter from this accounting firm means that there were no errors found. There were no recommendations that they're making to us to do anything different. And the money that we're putting into OPEB and we're putting into sustainability accounts is why we have the AAA bond rating. These are all critical, critical things that maybe other communities don't do. We heard the gentleman say, well, some towns use their free cash and operating to help balance things. Franklin makes that decision not to do that. We use free cash to go into our capital program as a strategic measure, so we're not counting on one-time monies to solve problems. Everybody needs to understand these audits are all available. They're all year after year after year. You can go onto the website, you can scroll through them. If you're really, really, really bored and you want to look at hundreds and hundreds of pages of numbers, you can see that professional people who are not employed by the town look at these numbers. We pay them a great deal of money to do this for us, and they come back and they say we are doing well. So I just hope that this isn't us saying this, right? This isn't Jamie saying this. This isn't Amy or Mark. This is a highly respectable accounting firm saying, once again, Franklin is doing a good job. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councilor Comey-Ledger. Other councilors? Councilor Frangillo.
Just piggybacking on that, I give a similar spiel and line of questioning every year on this, but just clarifying what this is and what this isn't. It's my understanding that this is a assessment of our ability to pay back a debt, or rather the likelihood of defaulting on a debt payment. This is not a report card of the town services or our likelihood of maintaining quality roads or balance having a certain level of police officers to residents or any such service statement.
I think that was a question for you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you. If I may, the first part of that is, is an assessment of our ability to pay back our debts. The financial statement audit is a snapshot of a point in time. In this case, it was June 30, 2024, and for the fiscal year that ended, and whether or not the numbers are materially fairly stated in accordance with GAAP or generally accepted accounting principles. It is possible for one to look at this and judge the creditworthiness, and therefore the ability to pay back its debts, its long-term debt. But really that opinion would come from rating agencies. And they base their opinion, if you read some of the detail behind their opinions, that it's based on a number of factors. And the credit rating is to judge the community's ability to repay its debts. I'm not splitting hairs. The purpose of the audit is to determine if the numbers are in conformance with GAAP or generally accepted accounting principles, and if the internal control systems are well designed and effectively operating. And from the audit, almost an extension of the audit, as well as demographics of communities and things like that, that's where the credit rating comes into play.
Appreciate the clarification. So I was conflating two different things that we were presented today. One is the AAA credit rating, which is a measurement of our ability to pay back debts. And the other is your audit report, which is how well we're doing at maintaining the accounting for the funds that we have and the expenditures that we're giving out. Okay.
That was very well said. The accounting and financial reporting.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Frangillo. Any other councilors? Anyone in council chambers have a question? Ken, just name an address. It's nice to have a finance committee member this evening.
Ken Ojuku, 73 South Street. One comment, two questions. First comment, I have heard a number of times over the past year about concerns around our finances and questions about our need for an audit. I had hoped we'd have more people who have those concerns here to voice them. I'm not seeing that, and so I'm a little disappointed there. That said, Mr. McIntyre, I absolutely appreciated your presentation. There's a lot of information that was helpful for us. I do have one question that I think could cause concern for somebody who's looking at this. You touched on it, but I would love to get a little bit more color there, and then I have one other follow-up question after that. In your financial highlights on slide 6, if you wouldn't mind going to it, the third one speaks to the $7.5 million of an increase that was a result of recognizing fiscal year non-spendable fund balance amount related to a pension contribution made to the balance sheet. You know, is that, I just would love, sorry, it's at the bottom of slide 6. Middle of slide 6 in the financial highlights.
You're looking at the financial statements and not the single audit?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably PDF page 12.
Sorry, further up.
I think that's where you're looking.
PDF page 12 is right here.
No, that's not it. It's the financial highlights.
What page is the...
In the financial statements, it's...
Page what?
Oh.
6.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, keep going up.
Keep going up, Jamie.
Yep.
One more.
It's just always funny because the PDF has a different number than the actual page, right?
All right, so right there. It's at the top of the page. Keep going. Right there. That third bullet. Yeah. At the end of the current fiscal year, unassigned fund balance for the general fund was $17.5 million, an increase of 7.8 in comparison to the prior year. 7.5 of that was a result of recognizing the fiscal year 2023 non-spendable fund balance related to pension contribution. I follow that. I think that can be very confusing. I would appreciate just a quick explanation of why that $7.5 million is not new money that we can spend for anything.
Sure. Great observation. I probably should have taken a little bit more time when I went through this, what I referred to as a timing issue. Let's step back to June 30, 2023. And this date is going to be within a day or two. So I believe it was on June 29th of 2023, so one day before fiscal year ended. Franklin paid its, as it always does in most communities do, you pay your county pension assessment at the beginning of a fiscal year because you get significant savings when you do that. Again, I believe June 30th fell on a Saturday last year, and so the payment was made on June 29th.
That's my birthday.
And it was wired out. So it wasn't part of your cash at that point in time. You actually prepaid it.
Yeah.
And GAAP, or generally accepted accounting principles, say, you know, if you got a prepaid asset, that's an asset that's not in a spendable form. It's getting a little technical, but and so as a result, because it's not in a spendable form, it's really not. Accounting principles required you to take $7.5 million out of your unassigned fund balance at June 30, 2023, and move it up to not assigned, committed, restricted, but non-spendable. So, had you wired that money out on July 1, this transaction, this requirement to put $7.5 million in a non-spendable fund balance wouldn't have occurred, and that's what you did in fiscal year 24. So, there is, if you look on paper, a $7.5 million increase. But if you read the components of MD&A, both in the prior year and the current year, it's well laid out for the reader that the overall on paper increase of $7.5 million is really just because of a one day timing issue.
Right.
Does that help?
Yeah, sir? That's helpful. I just thought it'd be worth providing that additional color, so I appreciate that. My one other question is just, it goes back to this question, to the concern around audits. The responses I have heard often have been, we do a financial audit every single year. One question that I think has come up a couple of times is an ask or request for a forensic audit, if I'm remembering correctly. I'd appreciate your thoughts on when a forensic audit would be necessary. Like, what's the point of that? Like, when would we want to do something like that?
Why would we?
And why?
I get this question a fair amount, and I have several phone calls a year about potential forensic audits. But in my opinion, the answer to your question is, when would you consider this? Is you would consider it if you thought there was an irregularity, if you thought there was waste or abuse, and things like that. That could trigger people to want to do a forensic audit, to look not just as to whether or not the amounts are reported in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, but to go through almost transaction by transaction to achieve a certain end result desired. Forensic audits come in all different shapes and sizes. The scope of them, the conversations I've had with clients and potential clients, you know, the first thing I'll say to them, what is the scope of this? What is it you're looking to achieve? Because, you know, an overall forensic audit could be 9 months worth of work if every single transaction wanted to be looked at. So that's just a little bit about my experience with forensic audits. I really think what a triggering point would be if you thought there was an irregularity, or if you thought there was fraud, waste, or abuse.
Okay, no, I appreciate that. And it sounds like what we're hearing from the financial audit is that there isn't a trigger point, that we're not seeing, you know, any fraud, waste, or abuse that would necessitate or suggest that we need a forensic audit to follow up on that. I think that's what I'm hearing. Hopefully I'm not misunderstanding what you've said. But I appreciate the time and the education.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Ken.
Mark, name and address, please.
Yes, just a quick question. Mark Minichelli, 31 Longfellow Drive. So I have a question, and I don't want this to be misinterpreted as my concern, but I ask this question maybe to head off concerns that others in the community might have. And it goes to the independence of the auditing firm. Could you share with us some information that would make everybody feel comfortable that that your firm is acting as an independent auditor during this process?
Sure. I mean, I guess I'll start answering the question with perhaps the obvious, which is, you know, it's been several years now that I think I personally have come before the Franklin Town Council as sort of the face of the firm, whether it be Melanson 3 years ago, Markham a year ago, or CBiz this evening, as to whether or not, am I too familiar with things? I guess I'll say that that's, much of that is in the eyes of the management of the town of Franklin. I will tell you that we follow all of the professional standards, both in terms of generally accepted auditing standards in the U.S. as well as generally accepted government auditing standards, and we rotate our people in and around almost all of our audits on a quite a frequent basis. As we became Markham a year ago, which we started this audit as Markham and finished it as CBiz, you know, we looked at things geographically. I was based out of our Andover office for a long time. As I sit here and speak with you tonight, I'm in our Merrimack, New Hampshire office. The audit manager and the audit team that actually executed the procedures under my supervision came from our Providence, Rhode Island office. We just made some decisions to look at things more geographically. And as a result, I was the only consistent person on the audit team. And I can't speak for Kerry, but Kerry will say I didn't perform too many of the auditing procedures there. It was our team from Rhode Island. So hopefully that addresses the question in an ample manner. If you'd like, I can expand upon it, but I think that hopefully will address the situation.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. And again, I think one of the big points there was, as Scott had alluded to early on in his presentation, that the team that did this year's audit was a totally different team than did last year's audit, other than him, which he admits to that he's just kind of oversees everything.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I do oversee it, but as is outlined in the engagement, I review all the work papers, and I am the individual who I sign it as CBIZ, but I am the actual person who signs the audit report. I just thought it was appropriate to clarify that.
I understood, Scott. Nobody could have given that presentation without diving deep into it to begin with. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any other counselors?
Just a big thing.
Anybody else in the audience have a question? Anyone out in Zoom land? Jamie, you got your 30. Well, maybe I'll give you a little more.
Thanks, Tom. Jamie. I appreciate it. I think, you know, with Scott on the call and due to this couple of questions that we got, I thought this would be an opportune time. As everybody knows, we had to go out and get a new bond rating just recently. You know, the chief financial officer and I and our staff did our ratings call. Scott referenced it to Kobe's question earlier about the difference of accounting versus the bond rating, and I'm not even sure actually if Scott knows this now that I'm thinking about it. Actually, as he's on screen, I was like, I don't even know if he knows that we went out for a new bond rating. But to his point, it was almost like he knew. But the good news is for the community, and people should be really excited. As of yesterday, May 6, 2025, the town has maintained for its third time its AAA bond rating. So we should be really excited. Not just to pick you up if you get a flat tire.
Exactly.
But I think, Mr. Chairman, the important piece that stuck out to me is this one two-sentence paragraph. This is from S&P Global. So for people that, I think to Councilor Cormier Ledger's comments earlier, and maybe a few others, this is truly independence as well. This is a whole nother level of people that we've never met before, we don't know. They look at all of our financial profile completely independently. Carrie has not slept in a month. She has to provide documentation upon documentation for a bond rating. But this is something the community should be exceptionally proud of. The AAA rating reflects Franklin's affluent and diverse tax base and strong financial management, both of which have helped fuel a track record of strong financial performance and the maintenance of steady reserves. In our view, management will likely continue its cautious budgeting practices, making expenditure adjustments as necessary to maintain positive operations despite revenue-raising limitations and ongoing cost pressures.
Perfect.
As a community, I would sit here today and say, after our work in here for a long time, and I know Mr. Nutting, I wish he would have stayed, actually.
Yeah.
You know, you truly, in my view, and in our world of town management, and I think the superintendent would say the same thing, you know, it's pretty hard to get a credit rating of this magnitude. It affects maybe about a quarter of the municipalities in Massachusetts. So we're in that 25%. And by the way, just think about how many communities in Massachusetts are very, very affluent and would easily get a AAA rating. Concord, Lexington, Dover, Weston, you just name all the communities. We are in that league. And that is something that the community of Franklin, the residents, should be exceptionally proud of. And I agree with you, Mr. Chairman, and it's great, truly, to have your support in particular, and I know everybody else's. This is really one of those things that is the most important things to this community. And I know a lot of people don't, you know, it's kind of, you know, people don't always understand it, or it's a quick announcement. But to have that on May 6, 2025, 5 years after a global pandemic, with all of the federal stimulus funds and all of the disruption and changes and cuts and everything, to be sitting here today and not have a downgrade and have a AAA, everybody should be really proud. And I do want to make sure I acknowledge, you know, truly, the Finance Committee, all of you on the Town Council, the School Committee, none of us can do this without you guys supporting all of us and raising your hands during budget season. Everything you do is added in here, and that is reflected in the AAA report. I also would say to Scott's presentation about internal controls, which is why it was kind of serendipitous that he was here when this came in, this is also a team effort on the staff. I mean, sure, Carrie, the staff do a great job. You know, Amy and I manage a certain portion of it. This is also about Kathy Morad. This is about and the DPW. This is about Laura Graver and the police department. This is about dozens of employees throughout our organization, the school business administration, the school finance office as well, the school and town HR offices. It's about the facilities department, Karen Tulloch. Those are the people that are actually executing the internal controls on an hour-to-hour, day-by-day basis. So this is really reflective of an enormous team effort from all the elected officials to all of the staff, the management, and throughout the entire organization. So I hope everybody has another round of applause and really congratulations.
Very quickly, Mark.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but that's great, Jamie. There's a lot of discussion about the AAA rating. Could, for the benefit of the community at large, can you explain why the AAA rating is so important and how it affects our pocketbooks?
Yep. Well, number one, I think to Scott's presentation, which is why I was serendipitous, and I'm sorry to keep you a couple more minutes, Scott, but based on the questions, he had mentioned in his presentation about ability to pay debt to Kobe's question and a few other things. When you get the top bond rating, that means an independent bond rating agency is essentially telling you and your community, not that just you're accounting well, like what Scott's independent audit does, but that we are financially solvent to be able to pay our bills and make sure that we don't go into any debt deficits or any other issues. But in terms of your question mark about how it affects your pocketbooks, you know, when you do go out to borrow money, you know, you are essentially put on a platform to be competitive to get the lowest interest rate possible. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we're going out for a minor item, less minor item, like a fire truck, yeah, the interest isn't going to be very much anyways because of the low dollar figure. But when you go out to borrow for the Beaver Street Interceptor project, yep. Or you go out for a new facility like a high school or a school building, when you go out to borrow the big money, that's where the AAA bond rating saves taxpayers, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars. And we did talk about this when you did the Beaver Street Interceptor. The interest rate was 1.5% because of a loan that we got. But think of the marketplace when y'all did that. Right. Think of when the council authorized that project. We're now 2 years into it and we're doing it at a 1.5% interest rate. Yeah. Your leadership and our preparedness saved this community millions of dollars in interest payments because we were ready and prepared, as opposed to waiting and now going out in this marketplace, even with a AAA bond rating, you're getting a 4% interest rate, right? Yeah. So when the bond rating agencies and auditors from an accounting standpoint, and they look at that, they say this town's got your financial practices completely together at an elite level. And I think that that is something that, to Mark's point, you save people in their pocketbooks, ratepayers, sewer ratepayers, water ratepayers, you know, untold amounts of cumulative amounts of millions of dollars over the years by maintaining this bond rating. And obviously, I think the second piece, which I mentioned, is just the fact that a ratings agency would look at your entire portfolio, including our audits, and then validate that level of standard is an incredible achievement. So thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Mark, I mean, Scott, thank you very much for your presentation. I know everybody has said how we look forward to it every year. When you come back with this kind of a report, we certainly do. So thank you for that. Jamie, Amy, the administrative staff, Carrie, great job. Thank you so much for your entire department, finance committee, school committee, all those involved in putting these things together to get us to where we are. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You need a mic to drop those
things. No, which is on the next agenda item. Yeah. Thanks, Scott.
Okay, Scott said I've had enough. I'm out of here.
He's probably on the next app.
Okay, moving on.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.